Welcome everybody to this session. I'll give just a couple minutes of brief background to this session. In 2013, the USDA NRCS had a thematic grant proposal call. This is their Conservation Innovation Grant Program, but they specified in that year that they wanted people to make proposals with regards to adapting cropping systems to drought and water scarcity. This was the time we were 2 or 3 years into a very serious drought in the southern and central Great Plains of the United States. It seemed to find its epicenter in Texas, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma. And since that time, the place that in our country that's been in drought has changed, but we continue to see major agricultural challenges with drought. And of course, it's not a new issue, but the idea is, what can we do as scientists, producers, professionals to make our systems more resilient to these droughts that tend to recur? So this session invited multiple participants who received grants from that Conservation Innovation Grant Program and others that are working on that, to come and share some of the things that they were working on or some of their experience or perspective regarding adaptation to drought. So the challenge to you as participants in this, as audience members, is to look for themes, look for principles that might be applicable in your own situations. What are these things that are kind of consistent adaptation strategies that make our systems either more vulnerable or more adapted to drought? You'll see as we go through the program that it's quite multidisciplinary. Unlike many of the sessions here, we're going to go from soils topics related to water holding capacity management to crop genetics and everything in between. So I think this will be an interesting and mind-challenging for all of us to participate in. So with that, I'm going to introduce our first speaker. Brian Fuchs is a climatologist with the National Drought Mitigation Center, and his task is to kind of get us thinking about drought and its tendencies and what we know about prediction and history of drought. So with that, we'll welcome Brian to the podium.
All right, thank you, Neil. Good afternoon, everyone, and glad to be here today and in kicking off this session. And so what I'm going to spend my time to kind of get this theme going and an introduction to the drought topic is I'm going to talk about what I do at the National Drought Mitigation Center, and we're at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, and even though we're housed within the university, we are a national entity and we do our work all over the U.S. and actually all over the world. So I'm going to give a short introduction to what we do at the center. The next part of my talk, I'll get into what is agricultural drought monitoring, what are the different methods and tools that we have out there to help us monitor drought in an agricultural setting. The last thing I'll talk about quickly is some drought forecasting tools. We don't have a lot in that arena, but I will talk about what we do have. And I do want to leave some time for questions. So with that, I'll dig right into it. So the National Drought Mitigation Center, like I said, we are at the University of Nebraska, and we have this web presence here. And what you can see on our webpage is we cover a number of topics. So we have everything from the basics of what drought is. You'd be surprised how many people call up and they just want to know, you know, well, what does it mean that I'm in a drought, or what does it mean that we're expected to go into a drought? And these are people that may be producers. They could be just the general public that has a concern. We also have some tools available. So monitoring tools are listed on our website here. And one thing we work a great deal with is planning. We plan with different stakeholders, individuals, to municipalities, to state and federal governments, to governments around the world. And we also have some information for kids up here. So there's a lot that you can get to when you come into our page. And the mission of the Drought Mitigation Center is to lessen societal vulnerability and impacts due to drought. And we have some different techniques that have been developed over the last 25 years. Dr. Don Wilhite founded the center, and he really was a spearhead in bringing a lot of these ideas and technologies to the forefront when drought really wasn't talked too much about. So at our center, I kind of want to have you envision it as a toolbox. We have a lot of information that people can come in and grab from us. And realistically, what we do is we provide this information in a way that it's not geared towards one specific entity, but to numerous groups all at the same time. So you can get these monitoring tools, these planning tools. We have information on outreach. Remote sensing has been a newer topic that has been seeing a lot of different avenues using satellites to start tracking drought. We have a lot of historical drought data, and I'm going to talk about that today, as well as an impact archive. So really, in my talk here, I'm going to focus on monitoring, impacts, and historical data. So for agricultural drought, we do have some different tools available. The main one that we really focus on is the United States Drought Monitor. That's a really visible tool right now, and more people are using it, especially now that the Drought Monitor has a track record of over 17 years now. The Drought Risk Atlas is something that we just had come online a couple of years ago, and I'm going to touch on what we're doing with that and even how we're going to expand that effort. And this Drought Impact Reporter. Earlier, we had lost one of the most intriguing applied climatologists, and Dr. Kelly Redman. He just passed away this last week, and he had a great statement that I heard about 15 years ago about drought impacts. And he said, you know, if you're in a drought and there's no impacts, are you really in a drought? And that really, it makes you think about that. If it's dry and no one's really suffering from it, are you really in a drought? And so that comment by itself, again, resonated into this Drought Impact Reporter tool that we have, and I'll talk about what we're trying to do with it. So the U.S. Drought Monitor, you see this on the news, you see it on the Weather Channel, a lot of the media picks it up, paper media, all over online. We have a lot of different groups that take this data every week, and they use it, and they use it in many capacities, planning, monitoring, and a lot of decision-making. And the Drought Monitor has become, to me, the go-to mechanism for not only monitoring drought, but giving an idea of what kinds of droughts are being impacted. So for those in the room that don't know, there are several types of drought. You do have meteorological drought, you have hydrological drought, agricultural drought, and socioeconomic drought. And the Drought Monitor, we try to capture all those with one map. So about the Drought Monitor, it began back in 1999, and it's a weekly composite drought map. It's not focusing on any one piece of data or one piece of information, but we're trying to bring together all the different types of data, the indices, the indicators, into a single product. This is done in partnership between the National Drought Mitigation Center, the Climate Prediction Center, the National Center for Environmental Information, and USDA. So there's 12 authors, and we rotate this responsibility around. You do 2 weeks and pass it on to the next person. So we incorporate all this different information from different agencies, from different data sources. I say we're very big data users when we're putting the Drought Monitor map together. And we also have this network of 400 experts around the country. They are validating the data that we're using, and they're also telling us, again, back to that impacts topic, what's happening in their backyard. They're telling us, are we seeing crop losses? Are we seeing damage? Are we seeing water supply issues? And having 400-plus people around the country that are reporting back to us each week with this information does help in putting the map together to be as accurate and as thorough as possible. So just some of the objectives of the Drought Monitor. It's the assessment of current conditions and current impacts. It's not a model. We're not putting all this data into some black box model and getting a map out. We're manually going in each week and adjusting those lines based on the most recent data. It's not an interpretation of just precipitation. There's a lot of other factors and indicators that are going into this product. It's not a forecast or a drought declaration, but some states do use it in this capacity as far as drought declarations go. We try to identify the major impacts that are being felt in a region. So we do have short-term and long-term impacts as well as a combination of short and long-term. So mainly with agricultural drought, you're going to be looking at those short-term drought impacts in our world of the drought monitor, that's mainly indicators that are on a time scale of 6 months down to just the last week. So very short term as far as those time scales are concerned. We bring in those local experts and their input. It's very valuable to this process. They can help us to identify regions that maybe the data are not picking up on, but they're also showing us areas that, hey, you should be paying attention to this region because we're seeing a lot of crop losses, we're seeing a lot of water issues in this area. We need to dig into that data a little bit more thoroughly. We try to be as objective as possible. We don't get any rewards or awards for putting more or less drought on the map. We want the science to speak for what we're doing with the map and putting that information on the map. And there is a methodology, which I'm going to get into. And in the end, the data must support what we're drawing on the map. We use a convergence of evidence approach. That's meaning that we take all the information that's available to us, and I kind of liken it to a trial, where you get all the information, all the evidence out in front of you, and what's it pointing to? If you start looking at it independently, what's the story that those data are telling you? And that's the convergence of evidence that we use. So again, here's the drought monitor map. You see we have short-term and long-term impacts being reported, and also a combination of areas that you do see both short and long-term together. Down in the corner, it says the drought monitor focuses on broad-scale conditions, and local conditions may vary. And the main reason we have that on the map is we know the data, the station-based data that we have in the U.S., as good as it is, there are holes in those data. And we do have to interpolate between data points and places. We don't have all these gridded data sets for all the variables. We do have it for more, though. So here's where the authors for the drought monitor exist. And like I mentioned, we have the three out at CPC, two at USDA in Washington, D.C., three of them at NCEI out in North Carolina, three of them in Lincoln, and then one out here in Reno. And that's the makeup of the authorship. Basically, to be an author, you have to work at a regional or national center. And all of us are volunteers. There is no budget to put together the drought monitor every week. So all the USDA, NOAA, and the National Drought Mitigation Center came together saying that this is an important mission and effort. We need to do this even with in-kind contributions. So the whole backbone of the drought monitor is based on percentiles. We have the ability to take any input data that's available and rank it from driest or lowest reading to wettest or highest reading. And you can divide that into the percentiles, and those percentiles, again, correlate directly to the drought monitor categories. So, for example, if you are in exceptional drought, that's saying that is the first or second percentile or the lowest readings based on the historical record. What's nice about percentiles is this can be applied to any piece of data regardless of the period of record. So you may have 100 years of precipitation data, you may have 30 years of stream flow data, 15 years of well data, maybe 60 years of stream flow data, etc. You can rank all those using this methodology and again come to that convergence of evidence of what the drought situation is looking like. And really what this allows us to do is it takes that anecdotal information out of the equation, because human nature tends to remember the last dry event or the last drought event. And so instead of saying, boy, it's really dry, we have to be D4, well, we can look at the data and say, yeah, your current condition is in the driest 1 or 2% we've ever seen. It is D4 at that situation. So how can we look at these percentiles a little bit differently? So when we look at precipitation, again, this is just an example from a station with 100 years of data in Nebraska. We can take all these precipitation events and we can rank them again from wettest to driest, and it shows you when those years were. So some of your wet years are up here and your dry years are down here, and that's all 100 years. And so when you get to D4, you're only talking about those two events. So if your current data is falling into those driest two events, that's telling you your D4. If you're getting to D3 or extreme drought, then you get to the next three events. So out of 100 years of data, you're only talking about the top five driest. Again, that's what that percentile means. When you get to severe drought, you pick up the next five. So out of D4, D3, and D2, you're only talking about the top 10 events. So when you think about drought, you have to see, are my current data falling into the top 10 driest for that area? And then to get into D1 moderate drought, you're only picking up the next 10. And to just be included on the map, you pick up the next 10. So out of 100 years of record, when we're just talking about what we're putting on the drought monitor map, we're only talking about, if there's any color on the map, those 30 driest events. And the other 70 are the wet or normal conditions, not in drought. So when we think about percentiles, we can do this with any variable. This, again, was just precipitation, but we can apply the same methodology. Now, in the climate world, you really want to see longer time frames. You want to see at least 30 years of data, if not longer. And so you kind of run into some problems when you start trying to do percentiles on minimal number of years because they just don't they overlap each other. But the methodology can be applied to any variable. So what variables do we look at with the drought monitor? There are some key indicators that we look at that have been around since the beginning of the drought monitor, and we still use those today. So we look at different drought indices such as the SPI or or PDSI. Numerous other drought indices are being looked at. Soil moisture is a key. In the U.S., we don't have a great deal of monitored soil moisture. A lot of it is modeled. But there has been this push of more mesonetworks and some of the data through the NRCS to put together more of a national soil moisture product. And there's been some efforts going on with that. Stream flow has been big. It's letting us know, you know, what's going on in our waterways that can be a direct correlation to drought. As I mentioned, remote sensing is coming into play. We've seen many different tools in the last few years. If you've heard of VegDry or the Eddy product or the ESI or the simple NDVI, those are all high-resolution satellite tools that we can use to help us monitor drought. Again, those local experts are part of this equation as well. Out here in the West, snow can be a big indicator, especially those upper elevation snowtell sites. And again, most of this information we look at comes to us from other sources. We don't really go out and collect it, but we're working with the people who do collect it to bring it to us. We generally use 40 to 50 different pieces of data each week in putting the map together using the percentile methodology and using that convergence of evidence approach. And not all areas are going to be equal. We know that not all areas are represented the same with stations. So just again, some of the key indicators that we are looking at in different times of the year out in the West. We also include reservoir data, SWASI data, the snowpack from the snowtell, snow water equivalency, stream flow. During the growing season, which we're thinking about agricultural drought, we really talk about crop moisture index, soil moisture is big. Any of the mesonet data around the country is big. And just even the state and regional information that comes out, those are the folks that are really watching what's going on in their state, especially during the agricultural season, to help relay that information on agricultural drought development. So that's what I have on the drought monitor, and I'll slide into the drought risk atlas. So the drought risk atlas, and I have the URL up here at droughtatlas.unl.edu, is really an archive of drought indices that are available for decision making. And these are the questions that we are hoping to answer with the drought risk atlas. How does the drought compare historically? How often does a drought of this magnitude happen? So you get into frequency. When was the last time a drought like this happened? You can look into the data and go back in time and see how long it's been since a drought of this magnitude has taken place. What's the likelihood of drought to continue? All the statistics are there to see what that likelihood or what are your odds of being in drought in any particular area in the country? What's the spatial footprint of drought look like? When you look at the entire country and you hear about the 1988 drought compared to the 2012 drought, were they really the same or were they kind of different? And those are the kind of questions you can look at by looking at maps of these drought indices. So unlike the drought monitor where we take all the different data sets and put them together into a composite, these are looking at the individual drought indices that are available. So how did we build this atlas? Well, data is the backbone of this product. So we scoured the entire co-op network for the Weather Service, and we came up with a little over 3,000 stations All these stations had at least 40 years of data. The majority of them have upwards of 60 or 70, but they were the most complete data sets that were long-term in the country, and this is where they're found. Meaning they didn't have a lot of data holes, and we had some criteria that we applied to get these stations. And so we wanted to make sure that most people were represented by a station. So what we did is you can see that all the areas in yellow are within 20 miles of one of the Atlas stations. Once you get into the blues and purples, they're still within 50 to 75 miles. We know that precipitation can be highly variable over distances, but we do have a good spatial coverage of the country. And some of the areas out here in the west, there just has never been data available in some of those places. And what we also did was a cluster analysis. We took all these stations and we divided them into different climate regimes based on the characteristics of the stations as well as the precipitation characteristics. So we developed 139 unique climate regimes, meaning that if you go into any one of these climate regimes, the stations within that area behave the same. So you may not be exactly near a station, but you may be able to pick the two or three closest and, again, get your drought history and get your vulnerability to drought. And this is the front page of the Atlas. And, again, just some metadata on the stations. So we had almost 40% of the stations had 70 or more years of data. So climatologically speaking, good long-term stations to, again, calculate these drought indices. And again, this is how we can compare those spatial footprints. So I have two drought periods from 1951 and 2002 here in the southwest, and we can see that in 51 it was more on the border between Arizona and New Mexico, where in 2002 it seemed to be more in the northwest part of Arizona and southern Nevada. So people will say, well, this drought was similar to 51. Well, we can go and look at these data and actually see what it looked like at those times. So up at the top, these are all the different variables available. So we have climate data, we have deciles information, SPI, SPEI, the Palmer Drought Severity Index, the self-calibrated Palmer, information on the drought monitor since it came up in 2000, the drought periods. You can compare indices and also look at frequencies. So this is just the SPI. It's the 12-month SPI. And again, you can see these dry periods. These were the two periods that I had compared on these maps here. So 51 and 2002, when you look at it, those were really, with the 12-month SPI, the two droughts of record for that period. And you can also look into the SPI values. Again, this is the 12-month SPI, and this was the worst reading ever seen, and that was in July of 1951, where we hit a minus 2.45, which is a very intense drought according to SPI. And then it just ranks them again. So you can see, you know, if I'm at a 1.4 right now, I can see that I wouldn't even be a top 20 event for that area comparing it to other time frames. And then you can also get information on these drought periods. So I pulled up a 12-month SPI and I said a minus 1.5. And it said we had 15 droughts during this period. The average duration was 52 weeks, so it tends to be, and this was in a station in southern New Mexico, it tends to be that once you are in drought, it does stick around a while in this location. The longest duration was 149 weeks, or about 3 years. Once you hit a minus 1.5, they stayed there for almost three straight years. So again, some of these long-term droughts we've seen in the southwest. The time in drought for this region is right at 20%. So if I'm a decision maker and I start looking at this station because it's in my backyard, I can see, hey, once we get in drought, we tend to stay in drought, and we're in drought about 20% of the time, reaching this magnitude of minus 1.5. So you can change these to different indices. You can change that time scale. Maybe the 12-month SPI isn't one you want to look at. You want to look at the 9-month. So all these indices are calculated within the Atlas, and you can download them as well. There's a download button, and bring all this into your own spreadsheets and manipulate it the way you want. And here's a frequency. There's frequencies up here as well, and it just shows how often you've hit these different thresholds on the SPI, and you can do the same with the Palmer, the SPEI, and different time frames. So in the Drought Atlas, we have about 2 billion numerical values in there, and that was with data through 2012. So right now, what we are working on is updating these indices. In 2017, I want to have the data updated through 2016. And we also, I had some students working for me this summer, and they found some additional stations, really looking at some of those areas where we didn't have good representation. And so we looked at more of the co-op stations, and what we did is we loosened our original criteria to bring more of those in. The Snowtail data, again, that's the upper elevation station. So if that's an important part of your drought equation, that data is going to be in there as well. And we also have some USGS historical stream flow data where we're going to calculate a standardized stream flow index for all those stations. There's about almost 800 of those stations. We're going to have gridded maps for all the indices, and I'm also working on some trend analysis. So we're looking at areas of the country. Are we seeing more or less drought over the last several decades in response to the climate change question? So all this will be happening early in 2017 as we see this information go. So here's another map of what we're looking at. The red stations were all the original stations. The green ones are 908 new stations. And then the triangles are 434 snowtail stations that are going to be included. So we're going to have a little over 4,400 stations in the Atlas Bay, which is about an increase of 1,200 from what we originally had. And 50% of the stations will have 70 or more years of data. So a really robust drought tool to give you the answers to those questions about how often drought, frequency, magnitude, duration, and spatial extent. Every one of those dots you'll be able to find that information out for. So the last thing on our tools is this drought impact reporter. So again, back to this idea of impacts, what we realized was when impacts were being reported, no one was keeping track of them. So the drought came, you had impacts, the drought ended, you were happy, you went on again, and then the next drought in that area came up and people were like, well, what happened back 10 years ago when we had this drought? What were the impacts being felt? When did they show up? What groups of people or what businesses or interests were being impacted? Of course, agriculture is always one of the main ones, but there are others that come in here as well. So about 10 years ago in 2005, we started this online archiving of drought-related impacts. So you can go into this product and you can find information on agricultural impacts, water, environment, fire, public health, recreation and tourism, energy, other businesses, and then policy and response information as well. So in this interface, you can look at a national interface, but you can also zoom into these individual states. And so we've seen a lot of drought in the southeast right now, so we've had quite a few impacts being reported from that part of the country. And what it is, individuals are able to input these in, but we're also scanning media stories with a clipping service, getting information on drought. And what we do is we take that information, we put it into the archive. So 10 years from now, when we're thinking about the southeast drought, we can go into Georgia and figure out, okay, what were the impacts that they were feeling? How soon did they develop? What sectors were impacted, et cetera? And this is really the first attempt of archiving these impacts on a national basis. And this interface is pretty slick. And there's this submit a report button. Anyone, any producer, an extension agent, anyone who's interested can go in and submit a report. And those of you who are familiar with the Cocoa Rouse effort around the country, Cocoa Rouse observers are able to input drought impacts right on their precipitation reports, and they go right into our archive as well. So the last thing I'm going to briefly talk about are the forecasting tools. With forecasting, again, there's not a lot of different games in town. We have the Drought Atlas that can give you a statistical forecast of what your likelihood, but the Climate Prediction Center really is the only group that is doing these long-range forecasts. And so we have a couple different tools. We have a seasonal drought outlook, so this is the most recent one, released the third Thursday of every month, showing areas where drought's going to persist, where improvement's going to happen or development's going to happen or even removal's going to happen. And then they also started doing a monthly drought outlook that just looks at the next month. So this is for the month of November. Again, we're looking at the southeast drought to continue to develop and maybe some improvements here in the northern Rockies as we've seen some more active weather in that region. So that's what's coming from the Climate Prediction Center, and this is really based off of their seasonal forecast that they do. And then one of the big things we look at are the oceanic indicators. Going into a La Nina winter, we have an idea based on past La Nina events that we're talking probably warm and dry through the southern half of the U.S. and wet and cooler up in the northern Rockies and Pacific Northwest, just based on past La Nina events. And this is really where a lot of the skill comes from long-range forecasting, is where they can tie their forecast to these oceanic indicators, not only in the Pacific, but the Atlantic and other areas as well. So with that, that's what I had for my overview on drought and tools and forecasting. And I think we have a couple minutes for questions if you have anything. And I also have my contact information if you'd like to get in touch with me after the conference. Thank you. Yeah, you're exactly right. As you have more of these extreme events taking place, what may have been an exceptional drought in 1980 may not even be top 5 or top 10 now, because we've seen so many of them. So climate change is definitely, I won't say skewing, but it's impacting how that distribution goes. And that's on not only temperature and precipitation, but other variables. You're exactly right. Questions for me? All right. Thank you, everyone.